From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Research Radio. Welcome to episode 45 of NIH Research Radio, with news about the ongoing medical research at the National Institutes of Health, the nation's medical research agency. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. Coming up on this edition, we'll have a chat about how to avoid holiday weight gain with Dr. Susan Yanofsky, co-director of the Office of Obesity Research at the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases. And speaking of the NIDDK, through its Weight Control Information Network, they've launched a program called Sisters Together, Move More, Eat Better. Wally Akinso has a story about some new Spanish language materials on the web for folks wanting the latest info on diabetes, digestive diseases, or kidney and urologic diseases. And if you have diabetes and sickle cell trait, you may be getting inaccurate measurements of your blood glucose. But first, there's new analysis suggesting that about 3.4 million Americans age 71 and older, that's one in seven people in that age group, have dementia. And 2.4 million of them have Alzheimer's disease. That's next on NIH Research Radio. Maybe you've heard of Tai Chi, an ancient form of Chinese exercise. The National Institutes of Health is conducting a clinical research study to see if Tai Chi improves physical fitness and well-being for cancer survivors in the Washington, D.C. metro area. If that's you and you're between the ages of 18 and 60 and your last treatment was two or more years ago, call 866-999-1116 or log on to clinicaltrials.gov. The NIH is a nonprofit government agency, part of the Department of Health and Human Services. New analysis suggests that about 3.4 million Americans age 71 and older, that's one in seven people in that age group, have dementia, and 2.4 million of them have Alzheimer's disease. The Aging Demographics and Memory Study, also known as the ADAMS Study, is the latest attempt to assess the prevalence of dementia and Alzheimer's disease, which is the most common form of dementia. Dr. Richard Sussman, director of the Behavioral and Social Research Program at the National Institute on Aging, explained why this study is unique.
Well, this is the first national study that has tried to estimate how many people in the U.S. has dementia or Alzheimer's disease. All of the prior studies were rather small community studies, for example, one in East Boston, one in Chicago. Additionally, the ADAMS study is part of the Health and Retirement study, a much larger study, and as such, it has some of the best data on economic status, family wealth, so one is going to be able to track the impact of dementia and Alzheimer's in terms of the disruption to the family, the personal costs, the economic costs, etc., far better than any other study ever has.
The study included 856 participants in the Health and Retirement Study, age 71 and older, from 42 states. Dr. Sussman explained why this kind of research is so vital.
Alzheimer's disease now affects around 2.5 million people. One in seven Americans over age 70 has dementia, and it's very strongly related to age. So over age 80, the fraction of people with dementia climbs dramatically. And as the baby boom ages, we're going to see the numbers of people aged 80, 85 and over expand by four or five times. So it's absolutely critical that we have an appreciation now of the public health burden that these diseases cause and tackle them as best we can.
The study was published online in the journal Neuroepidemiology. Thank you. nearly 134 million Americans, or 66% of the population. That's how many adults age 20 and over are overweight or obese, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. It's a huge problem, even more so for non-Hispanic African-American women, according to Dr. Griffin Rogers, director of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. That's the reason the NIDDK, through its Weight Control Information Network, has launched a program called Sisters Together, Move More, Eat Better. It targets that segment of the population most at risk from the effects of being overweight or obese.
Among African American women age 20 or greater, it's a staggering figure of 79.6%. And so that really is the rationale and the basis for this special program targeted at this population, particularly because we know of the health consequences associated with being overweight and obese. If one is overweight or obese, one increases their risk of diabetes, coronary heart disease, having high cholesterol, stroke, other cardiovascular complications, hypertension, gallbladder disease, osteoarthritis, cancer. There are complications associated with pregnancy if you're overweight or obese. There are complications associated with menstrual irregularities, stress incontinence.
The program consists of four age and culturally appropriate brochures: Celebrate the Beauty of Youth, Energize Yourself and Your Family, Fit and Fabulous as You Mature, and Walking, a Step in the Right Direction. These brochures encourage African American women to maintain a healthy weight by being more physically active and eating healthier foods. For more information about this Sisters Together program, log on to www.win.niddk.nih.gov or call toll-free 877-946-4627. When we come back, we'll have a chat about how to eat right over the holidays. That's next on NIH Research Radio. No doubt about it, you're on your way to the top. You're young, you've got the education, you've got the talent. So what's the harm in a little celebrating? I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Come on, tough guy, chug it. Be a man.
Chug, 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 chug.
You are under arrest for disorderly conduct. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you.
Please step out of the car, sir. I'm now going to proceed with a field sobriety test.
What could possibly go wrong? Plenty. That's what. The path to success is tough enough for young adults. Why make it even tougher? If alcohol is a problem for you or someone you know, visit www.niaaa.nih.gov for more information. Brought to you by this station and the National Institutes of Health, an agency of the United States Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to NIH Research Radio. Our guest in the studio, Dr. Susan Yanofsky. She's co-director of the Office of Obesity Research at the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases. Dr. Yanofsky, welcome to NIH Research Radio.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
The season is upon us. It's that time of year. Thanksgiving's right around the corner. Christmas is close on its heels. And with the holidays comes the feasting. There's that standard American attitude we have that we're going to gain 5 pounds over the holidays, so we'll work it off after the holidays. And you're here to tell us that's not necessarily the way it really goes, is it?
That's right. We had heard all the stories that the average American gains 5 pounds, 7 pounds, 10 pounds over the holidays, but we really couldn't find any research to back it up. So about 5 years ago, my husband and I decided we were actually going to see if this was true. We did a study, and we recruited about 200 folks, most of them within the NIH community, and had them come in and get weighed 4 times over the course of the holiday season. They came in the fall, then again before Thanksgiving, after the New Year, again in the spring, and we even brought some of them back the following year to look at 1 year weight gain. We fooled them a little bit. in that we didn't tell them we were studying weight gain. We told them we were just studying how changes in vital signs occur over the year.
That's very clever.
And what we found was the average person does not gain 5 pounds over the holidays. In fact, in the period between Thanksgiving and New Year's, they gain a little bit less than a pound.
Now, at first you would think that that's wonderful. It's only a pound. But it really is not good news, is it?
No, we always say this is a good news, bad news story. The good news is the average person gains only about a pound. The bad news is they don't take that pound off again. In fact, over the course of a year, they gain even a little bit more. And so it's the kind of thing where you might not really notice a weight gain of a pound or so. But over time, that's going to add up and probably contributes to the 20 or 30 pounds people gain over adulthood.
So it's not a case of New Year's resolutions are going to fix everything, or that glut of TV commercials you see from the day after Christmas for weight loss clinics and that sort of thing. How do we avoid this trap?
Well, it's very interesting. One of the things we looked at over the course of our study was who gained more weight, and also how did people really prevent that weight gain? And we found a couple of things. One is that people who were already overweight or obese to start with, they were more likely to gain that 5 pounds or more over the holidays. So we need to recognize that if you're already overweight, you're at risk and you need to be a little bit more careful than the average person. The other thing we found that was very interesting was it wasn't how many parties you went to or how many calories you said you were taking in, but we found that people who said they were more active than usual over the holiday season, not only didn't they gain weight, they actually ended up losing a little bit of weight. So it sounds as if you make a real effort to increase your physical activities over the holidays, that may be one way to prevent that excess weight gain.
Well, Dr. Yanowski, I hear my listeners now saying, that's all well and good, but it's Thanksgiving. It's Christmas. What do we do? I mean, sounds like Dr. Yanowski wants us to eat carrot sticks instead of a turkey dinner.
It's okay to have the carrot cake or the turkey dinner. It's just, everything's moderation. I'm not saying anything people don't really know in their heart of hearts. It's fine to have a slice of carrot cake. It's not fine to have the whole carrot cake.
You can have a sip of eggnog, not the whole carton.
Yeah, and you know, at any holiday dinner, there are going to be things that are just very ordinary and things that are very special. And I think one of the keys is don't eat the 500 calories worth of cheese cubes when you can get those any time. But if there's a very special pumpkin pie or a stuffing or something that you really enjoy, have that. Work it into your diet.
Do you have some diet suggestions other than what you just mentioned there? Different ways of preparing food that folks can keep in mind? Is there a place on the internet they can go to get more information about that sort of thing?
Just go to Google and you can get recipes that are going to be lower in fat or lower in calories. But I think, again, it's a matter of recognizing what's special and what's not. Mm-hmm. You're going to be going to parties many, many times. So, you know, one thing people can do is bring a dish that they know is healthful, like a fruit salad, to the party so they know they're going to have something to eat. After Thanksgiving, instead of then sitting around and watching the football game and eating a bowl of mixed nuts, maybe everybody can go take a family walk after Thanksgiving dinner. You'll probably feel a lot better, too.
Well, what about the guy like me, for instance, who would say, all right, I'm going to pretend it's Lent between now and Thanksgiving Day, and then I'm going to stuff myself.
Even one big blowout Thanksgiving meal isn't what's going to make a terrible difference in your life. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your Thanksgiving dinner, but remember, you don't have to eat like it's Thanksgiving every day between Thanksgiving and the New Year.
I understand there's the Weight Control Information Network. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. NIDDK offers a Weight Control Information Network. We have lots of fact-based information about obesity and weight control. You can go to the website.
That would be www.win.niddk.nih.gov. But I think if you Google Weight Control Information Network, you'll probably find it a little faster than that even. A lot of great ideas and tips on there for us?
Tips on physical activity, tips on eating more healthfully. One other tip I ought to mention to people, we may not like to think about it, but we've actually funded studies at NIH that show that people who weigh themselves frequently tend to gain less weight, and over a high-risk time, like the holiday period, might be a good time to check in with the scale every couple of days.
So what you're saying, Dr. Yanofsky, is it's not the time to be Spartan, per se, as far as the things you enjoy over the holidays. It's a time to be sensible.
Yeah, sensible and a little bit selective. You'll enjoy your foods more and your time with family more if you're not feeling overstuffed.
Great advice. And once again, that website for the Weight Control Information Network is www.win.niddk.nih.gov. Dr. Susan Yanofsky, co-director of the Office of Obesity Research at the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, thank you so much for being with us today on NIH Research Radio.
My pleasure.
When we come back, Wally Akinso has a story about some new Spanish language materials on the web for folks seeking the latest in health news. That's next on NIH Research Radio.
A key to good health is eating healthy foods. So, when you're dashing around the supermarket, dash to the produce aisle for fresh fruits and vegetables. Dash to the dairy case for low-fat milk products. Dash to the foods that are lower in saturated fat, trans fat, cholesterol, sodium, and added sugars. Dash to the foods that have been proven in the fight against high blood pressure. For more information about the Dash Eating Plan, log on to www-plan.org. This message brought to you by the National Institutes of Health and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Now here's Wally Akinso with word on how one institute at the NIH is making its information easier to access for Spanish-speaking readers.
The National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases recently launched three new portals to feature Spanish health materials and resources on its website. People looking for information about diabetes, digestive diseases, or kidney and urologic diseases in Spanish can now go directly to the appropriate Spanish language portal page, where they will find an A to Z list of topics and titles. Kathy Kronsfelder, the NIDDK's Health Information Clearinghouse Director, talked about some of the useful information that the site provides.
We have about 70 publications that are translated into Spanish from English, and they cover diabetes, digestive diseases, and kidney and neurologic diseases. And they have been available through our website for years, but we've recently translated all of the descriptions and all of the ordering information to make it easier for people who only speak Spanish to find the materials and get a hold of them.
Kronsfelder is optimistic about the availability of the health information to people who need it.
We hope that more people who need this information in Spanish are able to find it and get it now.
For more information, visit www.niddk.nih.gov. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
Diabetes afflicts nearly 21 million people in the United States, and according to the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, that burden is being felt disproportionately by minorities, including African Americans, Asian Americans, and Pacific Islanders. This is the same segment of the population that is at higher risk of having a blood hemoglobin variant, such as sickle cell trait. That's why the NIDDK is launching a new information campaign directed at diabetics of African, Mediterranean, or Southeast Asian heritage, outlining the specific need for testing average blood glucose. The A1C test has become an essential tool in diabetes care because it shows the average level of blood glucose control in the previous 2 to 3 months. However, for patients with one of these hemoglobin variants, some methods for measuring blood glucose are more accurate than others. We get this explanation from Dr. Griffin Rogers, director of the NIDDK.
Well, the important issue that we're trying to address with this new information campaign is that in patients with diabetes and a variant form of hemoglobin, some of the methods that are measuring the A1C level are more accurate than others. For example, if patients see a significant discrepancy between the A1C result that normally goes out to a reference laboratory to the values that one does on a daily basis and actually looking at your sugar, that may be a good indication that the A1C is inaccurate And in the appropriate populations who are at higher risk of having these hemoglobin variants, they should make their physicians aware of that. And what we're trying to do in this campaign is to both educate the patients about the possibility of those discrepant results, as well as the providers, to let them be aware that certain tests that they obtain from reference laboratory may be inaccurate in these particular circumstances.
The NIDDK offers two booklets that take aim at this potential problem. One is written for patients, the other for physicians. Both are available online at www.diabetes.nidddk.nih.gov. And with that, we come to the end of this episode of NIH Research Radio. Please join us Friday, November 30th, when episode 46 of NIH Research Radio will be available for download. These stories are also available on the NIH Radio News Service website, www.nih.gov/news/radio. Our daily 60-second feature, NIH Health Matters, is heard on radio stations nationwide, as well as on XM Satellite Radio, the Health Star Radio Network, and online at www.federalnewsradio.com. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to contact me. The info is right there in the podcast webpage. That email address is ws159h@nih.gov. Once again, that email address, ws159h@nih.gov. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. NIH Research Radio is a presentation of the NIH Radio News Service, part of the News Media Branch, Office of Communications and Public Liaison in the Office of the Director at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.